Once you start down the dark path, forever will it dominate your destiny. Yoda. Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B, coming at you live from Fort Lauderdale, where, as you can see by my window, it is still light outside. It was a lovely day here in Fort Lauderdale, as per usual, and I've got a great show lined up for us tonight. I have two guests coming on this evening. I have Brandon Martins and Peter Ayudin. And both of those gentlemen are from True Grid, but we are not going to be talking only about True Grid. As many of you have been following, we are talking ransomware and, of course, all the news that has been happening over the last couple of weeks with the dark side. And yes, that is why I picked the quote by Yoda: once you start down the dark path, forever will it dominate your destiny. But before we get to them, I just want to remind everybody that Podnuts Pro is your podcast for IT business support. We show up hopefully every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. and we stream live here on YouTube and the Facebook. And we try to present you with products, stories, and tips, all in an effort to help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. Hopefully tonight will be no different. I do want to say thank you to several of you. My Amazon account has had a ton of purchases. I want to thank everybody for that. I know that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I had gotten a donation through PayPal. So I want to remind everybody that if you want to support the show, you head over to podnutspro.com. There is a support the show page where you can do everything from shop in the Amazon store. You can make a donation on PayPal, whether it be a one-time donation or make it a monthly donation. You can buy me a cup of coffee. And you can also now participate in Patreon. I have one, my first Patreon supporter that we are doing, because we do not charge for sponsors and vendors to be on the show. So everything that we do is only by the support of you, the listener. So that is that. And also over at Podnuts Pro, you can see any of the back episodes that we have there. You can download the audio, watch the video, or subscribe to your favorite pod catcher. And always keep up with the show. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests here. Again, we have Brandon and Peter, both from True Grid, and we're going to talk ransomware. Guys, how are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm doing good.
I'm good, Marvin. Thanks for inviting us.
All right. Brandon, is that a chalkboard behind you?
No, it's a banner that I used for when I was doing road shows with True Grid. I actually use it now in my living room to block sunlight out so I can play video games. Okay. But it comes in very handy when I'm doing these kind of things.
So I see you got your priorities straight. Video games. That is good. Peter, how about yourself?
Well, I'm happy to be here, and thank you for making time for us.
All right. And Brandon, where are you guys?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, where are you guys located? Because we got to do the weather check, because that's something our listeners always look forward to. Now, here in Fort Lauderdale, it was, again, like I said, another fantastic day. The weather at this point in time, it is still a very comfortable 80 degrees with a real feel of 77.
I'm in Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri, and we had a rainy one today, about 75 degrees, very humid and very rainy. But now the rain has stopped. The sun is getting close to setting, and it has calmed down now.
All right. And Peter?
And I'm in Illinois. Our headquarters is in Schaumburg, Illinois. It's about 72 degrees right now at about 7:17 p.m.
All right. Yeah. So it's still a little chilly up in Illinois right now.
This is warm for Chicago. 72 degrees.
Well, I know, but 72 there is not the same as 72 here.
It's true. It's true.
Okay.
So, given what we went through in terms of the winter, we consider 72 degrees very warm right now.
All right. All right, gentlemen. Well, before we get into our topic tonight, I want to make sure that we do something that our listeners have gotten accustomed to. I'm going to do a tech story and a Florida man story. So we are going to go in the news. So, of course, everyone has been following the group DarkSide that was the company responsible for the ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline. But what some of you may not have known is that in the last 9 months, DarkSide has received $90 million. They got 4.4 from the Colonial people, but think about that, folks, $90 million over the last 9 months. And it is still questionable as to whether or not they quit the game after getting $90 million, or if the U.S. government shut them down, as has been reported. But we will get into that and other stories a little bit later today. I want to move on to a story that is in my in honor of my good friend up in the white north, Chad, as we now have a new gator that has visited another Wendy's. And a gator was captured yesterday, after chasing people through a Wendy's parking lot. And it was all captured on Twitter as officials from the Lee County Sheriff's Office had some fun documenting the event. And it is not known whether the gator was just looking for a cheeseburger or just hanging out, but the gator made his way across the street to the parking lot of the Lehigh Acres Health and Rehab, where he was safely captured and relocated to an alligator farm. So alligators in Florida, alligators at Wendy's is a very, very popular thing. So that is going to do it for today's In the News. All right, guys. Let's see here. I'm just checking the chat. We've got people joining us today. Hello, everyone that is joining us live, John and Sean. And I did not mean to rhyme there, but good there. So you guys don't have any of those types of stories where you are, do you?
No gator stories.
You know, I've been working from home all day. I haven't even looked at the news yet.
All right. Well, you'll get a chance to respond as we go into the Florida man or random question at the end of the show. But let's go ahead and get started, because this has been one of those stories where, I mean, the whole freaking world went crazy. And we are not even affected by that pipeline, but Floridians were getting more gas this past week than they ever have gotten because of a hurricane, thinking that we were going to have a gas shortage during this crisis here. But it has just been interesting. And there have been more ransomware stuff happening this week that did not get any attention because we're all so focused on this. So what I wanted to do tonight was, talk about ransomware. It doesn't have to be specifically the Colonial incident, but I did forward you guys a document that I shared with some groups on Facebook. I received a email Friday afternoon from a client who, they're not really a full client. They're not on any of our managed services. They're one of those clients where we'll just call you when we need you type thing. So I've worked with them now, I think it's going on 6 years. We've always talked about what things you should do to protect your network, and we need to fight against stuff like this. And they're like, well, we're fine, blah, blah, blah. But they get one little document from the FBI and the Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency. And then they're like, oh, do we need to do these things? And I just thought it was interesting, but go ahead.
Marvin, I actually shared that document with my team earlier, and the way I positioned it was like, this is all stuff I believe we all know, but it's now in a document for you. So I assumed everybody knew most of that stuff.
Yeah, all of this stuff that's in here, you know, especially under the mitigation section, all seem like stuff we've been touting for years that we should have our clients do. So it was just interesting that I wanted to talk about the approach that they went in saying that this was, you know, this was the gold standard of best practices. You guys in TrueGrid, now you deal with secure remote access, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But when you saw this document, you know, what did you guys think?
Go ahead, Peter.
I think for me personally, I think it's just a reminder of the adage with Marvin, you know, this is our industry. We know that security is multi-layered, right? If you read that document, there isn't one thing that's going to keep you secure. It's a host of things you have to do. Now, so what I always tell people, the best way to look at ransomware, you know, problems is to consider it. If you don't do two-factor today, for example, two-factor is the number one thing they said, you know, two-factor authentication. It's like living in a rough neighborhood and not having a latch on your door, leaving your door open. Or having a window and you go to sleep in a bad neighborhood and you left your window open all night going to sleep. You're exposing yourself. So sometimes we have to use metaphor. I think that business owners will understand. IT folks, most of us understand what they're talking about. But business folks that are not IT-centric like all of us, they don't know. They just hear these things. So I would just remind everyone who's listening, and most of you are probably technical, but for those who are not technical, there's a reason why banks have been doing two-factor for years, because they keep the money. They want everybody's after the money. So for the longest time, I've been doing SMS with my bank. So to answer your question, Marvin, it's a good practice. Everything in there are all good practices that people should actually take a look at and take very seriously.
All right. So I do want to let everybody know, in case you're just listening after the fact or you haven't heard about this, but this is a document that was put out by, it was on an official website of the United States government. It was alert titled AA21-131A, entitled Dark Side Ransomware, Best Practices for Preventing Business Disruption from Ransomware Attacks. And if you're listening to the show and you can't find that document and you want to get it, just send me an email and let me know and I will get you a copy. But this thing has been all over the internet. But it does one thing that I don't think a lot of us talked about. It talks about OT and IT networks. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting that this document went out to regular end users, and now we have to describe what an OT and an IT network is. You guys ever have to do that?
For us, I mean, those are phrases that I've heard, you know, many times. And I think it's just kind of trying to explain to audiences the many different kind of networks that are available today for that people connect to. So the FBI will actually wrote that document. Is outlining to anybody who's reading that document all the things you have to focus on. But go ahead.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned at the very beginning, the very first thing it says under mitigations, multi-factor authentication. I think all of us can agree that that's something that should be doing. Strong spam filters to prevent phishing. Mm-hmm. Now, number three, I'm glad it's high on the list for them, but it is something that we seem to forget a lot of times where it says, implement a user training program and simulated attacks for spear phishing. I know that a lot of times companies, you know, they'll have us come in and do one training and then that's it. There's no ongoing training. There's no program in place unless you get to, you know, connect with one of the companies. What is it? Breach Secure Now and some of those companies where you can put together a program for new hires and stuff like that. But, you know, we don't teach users outside of telling them, you know, don't open suspicious mail or open attachments if you don't know the user. But there are much more better ways that we can use to teach them about spear phishing. Just in here thinking, wow, I'm glad they put that up there. And then we talk about filtering network traffic, updating software, blah, blah, blah. Down the road there. So anything out of those mitigations that you disagree with, or is there something missing from the list?
Well, I think to kind of cycle back to what you said earlier, the operational technology is more the administrative part of what people do. So the training will fall under that because training is not necessarily technical. I was speaking to the CIO of a Supreme Court, not the federal government Supreme Court, but a state Supreme Court today. And he and I were talking about some of the things that they've learned through the pandemic. So what they've said is when people work from home, they tend to be more relaxed and they're likely to click more on phishing stuff, soft different websites because they're not in a control environment. So in that situation, his claim is that technology alone can solve that. That training, reminding people to be more aware of threats, which is part of the OT that the FBI is talking about. So operational are part of the of the technology, physical controls and things of that nature. And so I totally agree with everything they're saying. I think, Marvin, in what you do as a service provider, this is like back of your hand. It's like all obvious stuff to you. The biggest challenge is you brought up the a client of yours who's asking you, despite several years of probably you telling them they have to implement those safeguards, asking you whether it's something they have to do. I think that's really where the challenge is where people don't fully understand the threat that we're talking about. And I think maybe what we should be doing as technology providers is try and boil it down in simple terms, right? So instead of using technical terms to explain threats to them, let's use metaphors that they'll understand. Like, would you go to bed with your door wide open to your house? You're not going to do that. Are you going to, if you have, on your first floor, are you going to go to bed with your windows wide open if you live in a rough neighborhood or you live on a house that's up the road? You're not going to do those things.
I think we used before, it's like driving without your seatbelt on. You're just not really as safe as you could be.
Exactly. And then I think one other thing I'll mention, Marvin, is probably the best way to let business owners know today to take cyber threat seriously is to say they have to assume the posture that is actually going to happen. So when you take for granted that it might happen, much like we have auto insurance policy, because sometimes it's not us getting into accidents, it's other people hitting our cars, you have protection for those things. So you have to assume that all these hackers, they're just looking for open threats. They don't care about you personally unless you're targeted. Maybe the oil company was targeted, right? But most ransomware attacks are attacks of opportunity, right? They see someone that has open RDP port. They're sniffing from overseas and they go in and attack it. Or they go to the dark web and purchase stolen credentials. And those credits are attached to a domain. They come to your website, they find out how you log in. They see you don't have two-factor authentication. So there's all the things that people should take very seriously. And the best way to protect ourselves is to assume that we're likely to be attacked. We just have to prepare for it, like offsite backup, for example. Making sure that your backup system, you have a copy that's always offsite, so that if your primary data system is compromised, at least you have a chance to recover. So,
backup. I'll get to that in a second here, but I wanted to go back to the analogies that you guys have been using about, the home and the windows wide open. So I used to tell clients, back when I was stealing, the better analogy to use is think about all the preparation people go through to protect their homes. They get these doors with these fancy locks and the alarm and the cameras. And I would say to them, it doesn't matter if you have all of that. Your doors can be locked, your alarm can be on, but if the window is open and your purse is sitting right by the window, that's not going to stop anybody from just reaching through the window, grabbing the purse and walking away.
Exactly. Yeah, true.
So I explained to them that that's kind of how it is. And then how I would explain, we talk about, I talk about clients that are still running RDP naked to where it's just an open porch in the internet. And I explained to them, think about your house on the internet, on the open road, and the VPN as your gated community. You know, they've got to get through the security guard in the gated community before they can get to your house. And that's what a VPN does for your computers and your network. So that's what putting, you know, a VPN or some sort of proxy or RD gateway or something in front of it. Whereas if your, you know, house is out on a street and there's nothing to stop anybody from walking up to your house, that's what you're doing with your computers when you open up that RDP port to the internet.
I was speaking to a gentleman last week. We were just kind of talking about technology, and the conversation revolved around the fact that when the pandemic started, many organizations just started using what they had. You know, some went to buy new computers and stuff, but for most people, they stuck with what they had, knowing that it probably wasn't all that secure for what they were intending to do, but you had to do what you had to do to run the business. So now when things are getting better, people are getting vaccinated, people are now beginning to look at some people that really know what's going on. Well, no, I know we kind of shortchanged, you know, over the last year. Let's start looking at better ways. So what this gentleman told me that I was talking to, he came on to talk to us about using our technology. So apparently the company was representing recently been hacked over exposed RDP, okay? Well, the next thing he said, well, after we were hacked, we just changed the RDP port so that they wouldn't find us. I was like, no, that's not going to protect you. So
yeah, we'll just close the front door and open a side window, right?
Exactly. That's not going to protect you. You just not should be exposing RDP. You should never be exposing RDP. So to kind of align with what you were saying there, Marvin, about people that expose RDP, some people think, Marvin, that if you change the RDP port from 3389 to some other port, that is secure. Can you let them know that that is not secure, that the hackers are scanning every IP address they see online? They will scan all the ports that are open on there. And almost every technology product that sits behind that IP address, if I probe it, it would tell me what it is. Okay, you can send a command to an email system. It will say, "I'm SMTP, hello world." You could send a probe to an RDP on a different port. It will respond as RDP. You know, there's this thing called Showdown.io. I'm sure you know about it, Marvin. Mm-hmm. Where you can go online and find all the exposed RDP port. You can even search for 3390. You'll see machines that are using 3390 thinking that they're secure. You can see ConnectWise systems on there that are wide open. So exposing login protocols to the internet is not a good idea. They have to be shielded behind some sort of proxy, like you said, in some cases VPN, when done wisely. Those are things that people have to really be attuned to.
All right. So how many people or companies do you guess are still running insecure remote access?
Several. The last time I checked, I've checked a few times since the pandemic. When the pandemic started, the use of VPN and RDP went through the roof. It's kind of a little bit, but I've seen numbers that range from anywhere from 500,000 to over 2 million worldwide. Okay, and believe it or not, Marvin, in the United States, when they rank IP systems that have the most open RDP ports, surprise, surprise, AWS. Oh, yes. Azure, Rackspace. So now you would think that if you know enough to stand up a virtual machine in AWS or Azure, you might be fairly technical, right? But people are still opening up RDP ports on those cloud services. So that is the truth.
So the customers that say to me, well, we're going to go to the cloud and be more secure and not have on-prem services, we'll just put our servers in the cloud and we'll be fine.
Well, it's like saying I'm going to move from one part of town to the other one so I can open my window and go to bed. It's, you know, if you're close to the street, people are walking by and you want to be safe, you have to protect yourself regardless of where you're operating from. Yeah.
So I don't want to tattle on this company, but I'm going to in a way. So I did have a customer that, again, this was a, so I'll say this, They were a law firm that I walked away from a few years ago because there was a scenario where there was two separate networks that were trying to be one. There was an IT person for this one attorney in his side of the office, and I was the IT person for the other side of the office. And of course, you know, we didn't charge the same rates and we didn't want to do the same things. And they got to the point where they're like, well, we can only have one of you working on the system. And I said, that's what I've been trying to tell you. The other person, I'll just say that he was a nice guy, but he didn't know networking from hacky sack, but it was cheaper. So they went with him.
Yeah.
And then about 3 years later, they called me back and said, we need help. Can you come back? And so I did. But they didn't want to do a contract. They didn't want to do any monitored services. They didn't want to do any of this stuff. They got ransomware.
Mm.
And lost a lot of stuff because we could only convince them to do backup of their critical workstations, not the server.
Mm.
They were worried about their QuickBooks.
Yeah.
And I was going to do their servers and just find a way to, you know, slide it under the bill, but I couldn't do that.
Yeah, attorneys. You didn't want to slide anything under the...
Yeah, it was just... And so we were talking, and they were a firm that they were actually being told by some of their clients that they had to up their security.
Hmm.
And we spent a year trying to go back and forth as to what should be done and what should be done. And they just wouldn't do it. And it is just amazing how, you know, many people are doing that. So to get past them to talk about what they're doing now, they went to a cloud company. So they're paying more than they would have paid me if they'd let me do stuff. But they went to a company that literally all they're doing is RDP in a cloud, like you said.
Is it exposed?
I think it is.
Hmm. Some
or I mean, I haven't looked at it. I mean, maybe they're doing a VPN from the office, but I know they're not doing it from everybody's home because the attorneys can go home and RDPN. So I don't know what they're.
If I say this, Martin, for everyone, yeah. Microsoft had two issues in 2019. Two issues in the same year, actually. Early 2019 and late 2019. One is called BlueKeep virus. One is called Deja Blue. Okay. The two of them.
Deja Blue?
Yeah, Deja Blue. And the other one is called BlueKeep. The two attacks are what they call wormable RDP, meaning that if you're using RDP without NLA, that's something called network location awareness. If you don't have that turned on, and you actually have an exposed RDP, okay? Hackers can log into your network without any password. That is a fact.
Okay. Yeah. That was 2019?
It's still present today.
And so it didn't get fixed.
Well, the fix requires you to enable NLA.
Okay.
So if you turn off NLA and you expose RDP to the internet, you're likely to get hacked without anybody knowing the password. So because the gentleman I was speaking to last week that said that he got hacked, they didn't know how they got a password. I was saying, well, there probably was no password if they're not using NLA, right? People don't realize that NLA is a very, very important requisite for using RDP over the internet with or without VPN. It's just a safer way to do things. But more importantly, RDP just should not be. Brandon, tell the story about the company last year that came to us after they got hacked over VPN using laptops. Remember that the manufacturing company?
The manufacturing company.
Yeah.
I'm remembering the one that just happened recently, the trucking company. The
trucking company. Yeah, we have people after they get hacked. Tell the story of that one.
The trucking company, we had worked with them for, I would say, almost a month doing demos and getting quite a few people on their end involved, even an ERP vendor. And I think it was like right before they made a commitment to us, they were shutting down some stuff on their Citrix network or something to that effect, and they went like a week with unprotected RDP and got ransomware. So all the work that we had got them done to get set up for testing TrueGrid and working with us and showing them all the safeguards with the zero trust and all that stuff. They literally scrapped it all for a week and got ransomware, and everything had to be started completely over. It shut them down for like a week.
Yeah, that's true. That's just one of the many stories that we have about RDP. So RDP is safe when it's done the right way. It's never meant to be exposed. It's like saying that my login and password are not good enough. Well, there's a requirement for using complex passwords. That's a requirement for doing multi-factor. So once you're given a tool to use, every tool has instructions on best way to use and the wrong way to use it. So RDP is actually, Marvin, I challenge any IT person to tell me they don't use RDP. When you're within a local network, RDP is one of the fastest way to connect to something. You know, you could have, you know, all these other remote access tools like TeamViewer, LogMain, whatever. But RDP is actually one of those tools that we all use, right? But you have to use it correctly, which is don't expose it over there. We cannot say enough of that, Marvin. So, in fact, when you look at the top, what they call attack vectors, right? The top ways that ransomware actually happens, comes into a company network. RDP is in the top five, expose RDP.
Right.
And I would not be surprised if a good portion of those who are getting ransomed through RDP, they may not have NLA enabled. That's NLA. They don't probably don't have it enabled, and then they have it fully exposed with or without changing the ports. So that's, and then obviously VPN is now becoming a top attack method. And we'll talk about how VPN has been affected today when we get to that.
Okay. Well, let's first go back because I did want to, I had a note here. I wanted to go back and explain what NLA was because I'm sure there are some people watching or listening that don't know, but NLA, network level authentication.
Authentication, yeah. NLA, yes.
And it's really just a check mark on the server that, you know, says that a user must authenticate themselves before starting the remote session.
Yes.
And it's not turned on by default. And usually what happens is when people turn it on, there's always one person that is running an old version, you know, of RDP or Windows 7 or God forbid XP that can't connect, and people will just uncheck.
Disable it. Yeah. Yeah. I think what Microsoft should do is just make sure that any enablement of RDP is part of its NLA. NLA is turned on by default. In other words, it shouldn't be an option
right
for you to disable. So now if you have another client that wouldn't work with NLA, then you should get a new client that works with NLA. So
interesting. You know, I was, so, I mean, I have it on by, I think I have it on all but one just because I've got this one company. They don't actually remote from the outside, but they remote inside. They have an office administrator who thinks he's a tech. So he wants to be able to remote to everybody's machine from inside the network. So I leave it on, but there's nothing outside. So even my access, I VPN, or I use my RMM tool to do that. So, but I'm sure that there are, because a lot of people now, because they're already trying, everybody's trying to use their tablets to RDP. So if you're using Apple, you're using the Apple remote desktop app. Does that, I don't even think I've checked, does that allow you to work with NLA enabled?
Apple has its own remote. If you're talking about the Apple one, I'm not familiar enough with it. But if you're talking about RDP client, Microsoft RDP client on Apple, it is a client that connects to an RDP host. So it's on the host side where you're connecting to, that's where NLA must be enabled.
Right.
Yeah. Is your receiving host, the Windows machine that you're logging into, that's where NLA should be turned on. Yeah. So if you're using any device, whether it's Apple or Macintosh in this case, or iPad, Android, if they have Microsoft RDP clients, if you're using the new ones, they are NLA aware, meaning that if you're connecting to a remote host that requires NLA, they can speak that language. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now I want to go back to the one thing that we talked about under the mitigations that the FBI and what do we call them, CISA documents referenced that, and this is probably at least one of my biggest proponents to tell people, you know, if we can't prevent ransomware 100%, the one thing that you absolutely have to have is backups. And not just backups, you know, locally to an external USB drive, but, you know, that is either encrypted or offsite.
Offsite.
So I have all of my customers, except for, you know, the ones that are break fix that I still haven't converted yet, but all of my managed clients are on a double, you know, disk to cloud backup. And even the Colonial Pipeline, I did see an article where it said, even though they paid the $4.4 million, that it was still taking so long to unencrypt stuff that they were restoring faster with backup.
Of course.
Of course, my question then is, well, why pay the ransom if you're going to restore from backup?
I think it's probably because they may not know, and I don't know this to be true, but they may not know that they backed up everything. So if you have everything already locked up, encrypted, but you think your backup may only have covered maybe 80% of your data, and you don't know which 20% is not covered, the safer way might be to pay the ransom.
And it could possibly be because they want some kind of reinsurance that they're not going to do something else with the information. I think that's part of the ransom gig too. One of the things that was actually really surprising to me when all this came out was how adamant everybody was to not pay the ransom. Because from what I've known is that generally you pay the ransom and generally you get your information back. And that's kind of just how it works. So finding out that the FBI says not to pay the ransom and stuff, I don't know. I thought that was pretty common to pay the ransom, and that's why those guys are in business and they give the information back.
Well, I think that's the case recently, but, you know, ransomware has been out for a few years. I know in the beginning there were times where people paid the ransom and didn't get stuff back.
Right, right.
Okay.
So I think that's kind of what happened. But now I think these ransom people have gotten smart.
Mm-hmm.
By saying, well, if we make sure they get their stuff back, the next time we do it, we'll get paid.
They want to run a good, honest business, you know?
Right.
That's what it is.
In fact, some of them actually have a customer service line. They have a customer service line. Yeah, when they actually, like, to my mind, what you said, they now, when they first started, they didn't realize they were running a business, you know? They thought it was just, oh, I'm going to take your money and run. But then they're like, look, if the word gets out that we're taking people's money and we're not releasing their files, no one's going to pay off. So they started doing exactly what they promised. In fact, they would say things like, we're not going to destroy your, we won't release your data to the public, we'll give it back to you. In fact, in this case, I think they promised is the one company that, you know, we are aware of that got breached, where the price they had to pay was $2 million, negotiated down to $1 million. Part of the negotiation was, if we pay the $1 million, you're never gonna, you know, do anything to us anymore, and they agreed, because $1 million is a big payday, right?
Yeah.
So it's rough out there.
$90 million in 9 months. I mean, $10 million a month. That's a good recurring revenue model.
It's amazing, Marvin. Wouldn't you and I love to have that?
I mean, I saw later again, so Toshiba, had its European unit hit as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's apparently money to be made. This one was in the last week. It didn't say what day.
Mm-hmm. So Marvin, every time you hear about large organizations hit like that, you have to imagine thousands of small and mid-sized businesses that have been hit. We just don't know about them because they don't make the news.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, because a lot of them are embarrassed. And, you know, they think that they have more to lose than the big boys.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them for years are thinking, well, you know, they're not after me. Well, they're after anybody who will pay.
They really are.
Yeah. Let me show you guys this. I know I didn't get to prepare you for this, but I saw an article. Well, let me rephrase that.
Sure.
A doctor sent me a link this morning and said that, share it this way. He sent me this link and says, maybe we should enable this on all our computers. And it's an article that he found that says Microsoft has a hidden anti-ransomware feature in Windows 10 that you can enable.
Is it talking about Windows Defender?
Well, it's a part of Windows Defender. It is, let me scroll down and find out what it is. It's the something folders.
I know what you're talking about.
Controlled folder access.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, we'll just enable that. And so
I can tell you about it.
Well, I did a little research and tell me how correct I am. So it does work for the folders that it protects, but it does disable other security features. For instance, if you need to scan it or if you need to access it with encryption, that stuff won't work. And it doesn't detect things in real time. So if you do get a ransomware attack and it's encrypting files, it's not going to, you know, give you any sort of alert or anything like that. And then, of course, management. There is no centralized management from what I can tell.
That is true. I'm going to show whether it's part of the, what they call ATP. If you're using Microsoft 365, they have advanced threat protection now that actually manages a lot of components of the Windows Defender. When I played with the control folder access, when Windows 10 first came out, it was very unstable. But, you know, with Microsoft, the first release may not be as stable and over time. So it may be much better right now. But at the time, I recall that many applications that I was running couldn't access those folders. So you know how sometimes it's one thing for you to go into Windows Explorer and navigate to a specific folder, that worked. But if I was using some app that needed to go open a file from that folder, that didn't always work. So, but I'm sure they probably have, you know, they fixed that right now. But and then for anyone who's interested in that, they may look at the Microsoft Advanced Microsoft ATP, which is part of Microsoft 365. Right.
All right. Well, we are cruising right along here, so I do want to give you guys a little bit of time to pimp yourselves. I know that when I introduced you, I mentioned that you guys were from TrueGrid. We did not explain what TrueGrid was, but I will be open and honest and say that I am a new member to the TrueGrid family. So TrueGrid provides secure remote access for clients, and basically it is a proxy service where customers log into a portal and can then RDP into servers, desktops, or whatever you have it. So that's my crude explanation of it. So you guys want to quickly give me the real explanation of
Brandon, want to take TrueGrid?
I was going to say you take it, Peter.
Okay. So TrueGrid is probably we have a feature called Secure RDP. So the simplest explanation of the technology is it allows you to log into any Windows system anywhere in the world, behind the firewall, without exposing that firewall. Okay? In other words, it pretty much shields you from the internet. Nobody knows you exist. It makes your RDP connection invisible to the world. And multi-factor is built into it. So there's no way to use a product without multi-factor. You don't have to pay for the extra. It's built into it. And so whether you have machines in a server room, AWS, private cloud, public cloud, a regular PC in the office, it can force a connection to them. So, and we're going to talk about the new feature that we're releasing tomorrow at the right time, Marvin. So okay. That's a nutshell of our TrueGrid.
Yeah. One of the things I would add to that is that one of the beauties of our product here is that we don't trust any device. So as an end user, maybe they have their work PC, and then maybe they have their home laptop, then maybe they have their home PC, and then their iPad, or so on. We have a simple connector that's a one-click technology that gets installed, and it secures the connection, no matter what device you're on. So it doesn't take any IT division to get this set up. This is something a home user can do just by clicking on the link and downloading the connector, and then you're ready to go.
Yeah, once the IT sets up the back end,
Yes. Well, I guess, yes. What I'm saying is if a user's already set up and they go and they're out to work on travel or something like that and they lose their laptop, they can go to Best Buy, buy a new laptop, and get back rolling without any IT help.
Exactly.
So that was one of the features that worked out for me and my client. I think I've got three that are on it, that one of them is a pretty large client, and they didn't want us, you know, to be calling users at their homes to install VPN software or anything like that. So this was something I could say to them. So look, they can install this without us. It's easy. I actually grabbed one of your videos and sent it to them and said, this is, you know, how they should use it. The other feature that I liked is you've got an Active Directory connector. Yes. So for people that are running Active Directory, the users are already set up. You don't have to create new passwords for them or anything like that. There's two groups that get set up with the, what's called the Sentinel software, right, that you install on the server, the Sentry. And you just put the users in the group, and it syncs up, and they're good to go.
Exactly. So, and if I can add to what you have just said, is another feature that people like about the technology is that you can use Active Directory with multiple VPNs. So if you have an organization that has like maybe two firms are joining together, and one is abc.com and one is xyz.com, you could support them with a single Active Directory, okay? And people can log in that way. And it's actually, it's also versatile in the sense that you can actually group together Windows machine from multiple sources. So you could have a data center in California, one in Florida. They don't have to be connected in any way. And users from a single dashboard can make a connection, secure connection to all of them. And the secure connector software that runs on the user endpoint is the only thing that can make the RTP connection. So the entire device is not exposed. So there's no line of sight. There's no IPsec tunnel. There's no path between the entire laptop IP stack into your company network. It's, they're totally blind to it. That is the zero trust that Brandon was talking about. Yeah.
All right. Now, we didn't mention zero trust was one of the things that has been touted for ransomware. If you're doing a remote connection, do zero trust, which basically not only doesn't trust anybody, but you can block down, you know, access to printers and drives and all sorts of things, although users want to open up, you know, some stuff sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That would be up to the admins, right? So you probably already know this since you're a customer, that the default installation of TrueGrid is zero trust. I mean, it turns off all redirection, okay?
Yeah.
So that the only thing the user can do, and we don't care how dirty, how compromised that remote machine is, they can't see your network. They can make an RTP connection, but they cannot pass anything through that RTP connection. They can't do copy and paste. There's no clipboard mapping. There's no printing until the admin turns it on. So it is actually secure out of the box that way. That is actually one implementation of zero trust.
All right.
Yeah.
And let's see here. I'm popping onto my dashboard to check out some stuff. But yeah, you block everything.
Yeah, by default we do.
Yeah, and we also have a feature too, where if you don't want an employee to see an entire desktop or server, you can just publish the applications that they need to use as well.
That is true. Our remote app feature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you're having a feature release coming up. So right now, you can either do all of your configuration either in the web portal, or you can connect people using Active Directory if they have an on-site domain controller or a server on-site that you can do all that you install the Sentry software to.
Exactly.
But you didn't have anything for Azure or in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
That's about to change, right?
Yeah, that changes tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Yeah. So you want to expand on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the feature that we're releasing tomorrow is our support for Azure AD. So if you're somebody who's already consuming Office 365, you already have your service provider, you have customer tenants who are using Office 365, and you want to use TrueGrid, you now don't have to rely on internal Active Directory or even a two-factor, because most people probably already have two-factor enabled for the Office 365. So our Windows Connector software or our web interface, once you join your TrueGrid tenant into Azure AD, which happens in like 5 minutes, there's all of 5 minutes to set up. Okay, it's that simple, okay? Once you do that, the next time your end users log in, they will see the Microsoft Azure logo, Microsoft logo when they click on it. It will bring up the Office 365 login. They log in with their same credential, same two-factor token. They're smooth and sailing. They'll be able to connect that way. So it is, we rank every week, we go through a support list and a feature request list. That request for Azure AD has been number one consistently for the last maybe 4 or 5 months. So we had a fast, we had to just push it out because everybody, a lot of people wanted it. So we're very excited about it.
All right. So I did put the link out to both chat rooms on YouTube and the Facebook. I've got the link on the screen, truegrid.com, and you can go there and see everything. Now, your pricing for the end user is pretty much there.
Yes.
So I don't want to talk too much about that, except to say that I did have a client that the third client I got on, they were using LogMeIn for their remote access. And when they came to me, they needed to do an update to security to get cybersecurity insurance. Mm-hmm. So we talked about all the stuff they were doing. We talked about, you know, making secure remote access for them. And when I told them, you know, what we could do for them in lieu of their LogMeIn, we were able to provide them the secure remote access for less than what they were paying LogMeIn for, but they got their entire office on instead of just a few, because the price that they were paying, they only could have like five people on at a time or something like that. So, you guys ever get, I mean, this, I'll be honest, I don't see a lot of other pricing out there. So this is something for what people get with secure remote access. Do you ever get kickback on the pricing?
As you very well know, Brandon can tell you, we went to market with service providers. You know, I think you belong to one of the group.
Yep, ASCII.
Exactly. We did a 14 different conferences with ASCII between July 2018. Brandon and I, we were sleeping at airports and hotels. It was all fun. And so the community, the service provider community, they are friends of ours, and we've grown through them. And you guys, as you very well know, you have preferred pricing. Yep. As an ASCII member, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got the TrueGrid Basic, TrueGrid Business, and then the MSP, which you would call them and call Brandon and get you set up as an MSP, that you can have a portal where you can have all of your clients underneath there and manage them all in your basic MSP portal.
That is true. Even the Azure AD MSP can't manage multiple customers with their different tenants from a single console.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So any other points that we want to say on TrueGrid or ransomware?
Brandon, sure.
Anybody that's interested to hear more about TrueGrid, just go to our site, click on the apply to be a partner, and that'll put you in contact with me, and we can schedule a demo and discuss everything.
Fantastic.
All right. Simple enough.
Yeah, on our side, Marvin, thanks for allowing us to discuss ransomware and technology in general with you. I love technology, as you can imagine, so I like talking about not just about our product, but the wider ecosystem of tech. So,
well, we should probably do another show on remote access and talk about some of the other things. But, you know, this ransomware topic has been huge, and I appreciate you guys kind of going off script, not talking about your company, but talking about ransomware in general allowing that discussion to happen.
Yeah. So, can I say something, Marvin, real quick?
Yeah.
I was watching a webinar recently, and I thought I'd use this line. So the title of the webinar was Ransomware is a real pandemic, something like that. Ransomware is a real pandemic. And I think the reason why they said that was this is not to downplay people that died, you know, in the last pandemic, but in the business world, this is a very serious matter. This is very serious. We all know with SolarWinds, Microsoft was affected, Justice Department, several agencies. If the largest companies that have money and resources are getting affected, small businesses don't have a chance. I know of companies that went out of business because of ransomware. There's a software company out of Wisconsin. They make dental software for dentists. I think they were hosting their customers. They got ransomed about 2 or 3 years ago. And a couple of their doctors just shut down because they lost everything. They weren't going to pay ransom. It is that bad. So it's a welcome topic, Marvin. People need to hear this, that they shouldn't take it lightly. The MSPs, what you do, you are telling all customers to take it very seriously. We want to lend our voice that it's actually good for them, for their own business survival, to listen to partners like you telling them to be very secure. So that's pretty much all I can say. It has to be taken seriously.
Well, we should probably also say that it's not just for our clients, it's us as well. Yes. I mean, MSPs are being targeted because of the amount of data that we have in our portals. Mm-hmm. And we need to be more diligent, you know, on our own behalf, more in favor of, you know, the clients that we protect. So, you know, we need to be doing all of this stuff as well. So it's not something where, you know, we need to be going out to our clients and saying, hey, are you doing all these things? Mm-hmm. There needs to be some accountability on our end to make sure that we're doing them as well, too.
Yeah, obviously, MSPs have a big key to the kingdom, right? Is wanting to attack one customer, but you attack an MSP successfully, boom, you have access to a lot of customers. So that's why the danger is there.
Yeah. All right, guys. So we've come to the portion of the show that I know you're not completely prepared for it, but I want to give you the opportunity. You heard my Florida man story during the news segment here. So this is the part of the show where you get to challenge either with a Florida man challenge story from your own hometown or state, or would you rather hear a random question? You can talk amongst yourselves and make it,
I actually have a story I can tell. Does anybody realize that if you get bitten by a bat, that they don't know whether the bat has rabies or not. It may require, how many injections, Brandon, do you think it might require?
I think it requires 6 on the very first day and then 1 every week for the next 4 weeks.
Did you hear that, Marvin? Did you know that?
That's what you have to do if you get bitten?
Yeah.
Yes.
By a bat, if they suspect that the bat has
rabies. Or by an animal that could be suspected to have rabies. Yes, apparently.
Did you have somebody in your company get bitten by a bat? Is that why you're telling this?
No. We don't want to disclose all that, but we do know somebody that possibly was involved in something like that. Apparently with rabies, though, you will die if you get it. So you can't take a chance with not getting treated if you don't know.
Yeah.
So don't be playing with wild animals that fly and have little tiny teeth and stuff like that.
Okay. Oh, so many questions. Why would somebody just play with a bat?
Well, maybe the bat got trapped inside of a resort, and the person was an animal lover. And after the bat was removed from the building safely, it didn't fly away right away. So maybe they gave him a little nudge outside to maybe get him to fly. And at that point in time, was attacked. And I'm gonna say it was not me because I would never touch an animal.
Not us.
But apparently you know who it was.
Oh, yeah.
That's our Florida man story, Marvin.
Okay. I'm going to have to do some searching on that, see who was trying to be the Batman.
Yeah.
Oh, my. All right.
Somebody's not going to be happy with us, Marvin.
No.
Listen, we didn't say any names, right?
That's true.
No.
They know who they are, though.
Only if they're watching, right?
They should be.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will leave you with that. If you get bitten by a bat, you will have treatments for weeks.
Treatment for leaves.
And if you get the bat rabies, you can die.
Yes.
Yeah. Rabies is bad. Good stuff.
I'm quickly Googling to see where the bat stories are recently. So the apparently Sammamish resident was bitten by the first rabies positive bat of 2021, but that was in the city of Seattle. So you guys are off the hook there.
We're off the hook. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Brandon and Peter, I want to say thank you for watching and or listening to this episode of PodNuts Pro. And if you, again, want to get a copy of the document that you cannot find entitled Dark Side Ransomware Best Practices for Preventing Business Disruption from Ransomware Attacks, you can find that over at podnutspro.com. Once this episode is published, I will have the links to there. I will also have a link to the TrueGrid page, where you can apply for more information and to be a partner and hopefully start providing your customers with secure remote access and never, ever let a customer run RDP naked. That's the advice we have for today. Yeah. So that is going to do it for our show. Let's see. We've got a great show next week, too, as well. And let me just pull up who it is, because we have already started planning for the Summer Tech Series, folks. I've got people already lined up. We've got Don and Nancy and Jim and Tom and Jason. We are going to have a great summer series all about tech. And let's see, next week. Oh, I should probably say this. I probably should have said this at the beginning of the show. So I've got a couple of things working. First, and you guys bear with me here. I know we're not going to end off the way I normally do, but I probably need to make a clarification. Last week when I was talking about firewalls and we were talking with the Datto folks about their firewall and I mentioned, oh, maybe I should get one. I got a message asking if I was abandoning SonicWall. And the answer to that is no. So SonicWall is still going to be my primary flagship of a firewall. However, I have been using Arachnis as my secondary entry-level, low-end firewall that doesn't have all the bells and whistles, none of the UTM features. But since Datto Firewalls does have some of those features, I thought maybe I'll take a look at it and see if it will become my number two at this point in time. So let me assure everybody, Uncle Marv is not abandoning Sonic. So just wanted to say that out there. And what else did I need to respond to? There was a couple of comments that I needed to say. Oh, secondly, in a couple of weeks, I will be having a show with a new VoIP vendor. Many of you have known that when I finally took the plunge to get into the voice over IP game, I went with Freedom Voice that got purchased by GoDaddy. And GoDaddy, in their infinite wisdom before the pandemic started, decided that they weren't going to sell voice over IP to new customers. So I have been looking and looking and looking. I thought I had found a provider in Intermedia. And sorry, Jason, but I might be abandoning Intermedia. So there is a new player. To me, they have been around the industry for a while, but many of you may remember the name Paul. That is now with a company called Pulsar 360. I just went through a couple of quick trainings yesterday and today. I'll be doing a technical training here in the next couple of days. I will be getting my NFR phone system here in a few days. And I've already got quotes for two customers that we're going to be looking to move them over to Pulsar 360. And for those of you that are already saying, why no Intermedia? Well, let's just say I don't have the warm, fuzzy feelings about them that I thought I would have. I don't like their portal. There's some quirks in terms of setting up the system and maintaining the system that I don't like, because in order to get them done, I have to call support to have them done. And I want to be able to configure my own phones if I'm going to do this. So It's not 100% that I'm abandoning them, but I'm just, that's where I am, folks. I like to be open and honest with you. And that's why we'll be having Pulsar 360 on the show to talk about them and talk about my evaluation of them. And we'll see how things go. So, Tom, that answers your question. Why no Intermedia? I still have them. I'm actually using them in my office now. They are my phone system. So very nice phones. Yealink 46Ss. Very nice. I like the phones. So that is it. And if you hang out through the break, I'll answer more questions. But right now, that is going to do it for this episode of Pod Nuts Pro. And on behalf of Brandon and Peter from True Grid, do go over and check out their site and see what they're all about and see how they can help you provide secure remote access. And that's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back next week. And until next time, holla.